The show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. And on the show today, I'll be talking one of the members of a trio called Time for Three. They call themselves a classically trained garage band. They'll be playing at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And Zach Depew is one of their two violinists. I'll be talking with him in the second portion of our show today. But first up will be two cast members of Springfield Theater Center's production of the musical 1776, which opens tomorrow at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield and runs for 2 weekends. And we'll be talking with the couple who play the Jeffersons, not the ones that you may be familiar with from the television show. Here on Live and Local, stay tuned.
All right, gentlemen, let's get on with it. Which of us will write our Declaration of Independence?
Mr. Adams, I say you should write it to your...
You are driving me to homicide!
Homicide! Homicide! We may see murder! Yeah!
That song comes from the musical 1776 and the film soundtrack. I couldn't actually find a recording of the Broadway cast, assuming that there still is one, but nonetheless, it's a great musical, and the Springfield Theater Center is presenting it at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield this weekend and next. It opens tomorrow for Friday and Saturday performances at 8 and Sunday matinee at 2, and then next weekend with the same times and days and times. And on the phone with me now are the couple who are playing a couple in the show. Michelle and Matthew Deering are Martha and Thomas Jefferson, respectively, in the show. And I appreciate your joining us. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Well, I say coming in, but you're actually in your own store in Springfield. You guys run a jewelry store.
We're at Denny Jewelers here in town, and we're also a sponsor of the show.
And
so excited to do that.
Yeah, well, that's very nice of you to do the sponsorship. It's that sort of thing that keeps shows going. And I know that's a big concern for the Hoagland Center in general.
Absolutely. The Hoagland is asking for a lot of support, and they're having lots of shows this year to support their efforts. And we at Denny Jewelers are excited to be able to support this show. It has a great cast and directed by Rich McCoy, and we're happy to help make this show happen.
So I have to ask a really bad question here, Matthew. Did the fact that you guys sponsored have anything to do with your getting cast, or did it go the other way around?
We decided to sponsor it after we would step in and
that's correct
and do that. We're always happy to help support the arts in the community, and especially the show. It's got an amazing cast. Kathy Doyle, Abigail Adams, Harvey Mack, John Adams, Darren Harms, John Dickinson, Paul Presney, Benjamin Franklin. Just an amazing, amazing cast. Anyone that knows the theater community of Springfield is going to see a lot of their favorites up there. A lot of people that they can't always cast because there's not always 27 roles for amazing men. So really everyone is truly so strong in their character, and it's just a dynamite cast, and we're so pleased to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
Well, that's one of the fantastic things about this show, and unusual things about this show, is it's not a terribly large cast. Everybody is important, and almost everybody is male.
Correct.
Yes.
With maybe
two
exceptions.
Lovely ladies.
Yeah.
We balance them out.
Lovely ladies. Nice of you to say that in reference to yourself.
Yes, I am so modest.
So, Matthew, as one of the many males here, and I know there's got to be at least 13, since representing the 13 colonies,
mm-hmm.
What have you? I assume you've been on stage before yourself.
Correct. Yeah. I've
yeah.
Been some theater here.
Mm-hmm. So, how does the dynamic change with a virtually all male cast versus other shows you've been in?
Well, it's actually it's nice to be able to have so many great people on stage all at the same time, because throughout the whole show we're all responding and reacting with one another. So when you're in a smaller show, you're maybe just responding and reacting with one or two other people or however many, but here we've got there's 25 other, or there's 24 other guys plus me that we all get to work off each other, and there's so many different characters and so many different personalities and qualities that you get to work with, and so it actually makes it really interesting because everybody's a little bit different with how you get to play off them. So that makes it a lot of fun.
So you've actually addressed not so much the fact that they're all male, but the fact that they're all on stage at the same time.
Yeah, just about, there are times when everybody, all of the males are on stage. So it's a neat, and what that allows, it just, with the, we've got amazing costumes, we're all in great makeup and fabulous wigs, and everybody on stage at the same time and a great set. It's just an amazing image that the audience is going to get to see when they're watching the show, even if we're just all sitting there quiet at certain moments, and it's just going to be a great image.
Mm-hmm. And I think it definitely calls to mind the gravity of the occasion. Just, you see the painting of the signing of the Declaration. It's just one of those images in American history that is so strongly imprinted on our minds. And to see that throughout the show and to see them interacting with each other and all the things that had to happen for it to come about, I mean, it's really amazing that we are even a country with all the struggles that they had to go through.
Well, that's for sure. So let's talk a little bit about the story itself. We're talking, to remind folks who are just tuning in, about the musical 1776, which opens at the Hoagland Center in Springfield tomorrow, being put on by the Springfield Theater Center. And the song I opened with, "But Mr. Adams," in a way is sort of typical of a number of songs in the show, where there's a lot of argument going back and forth and objections and this and that. And, of course, as Matthew, as Thomas Jefferson, you're addressed in here by somebody or another, or I guess by Mr. Adams.
Correct.
So give us a little bit of an overview of what's the sequence of the story and how does that particular song fit in here?
Well, the whole idea of the story is to sort of dispel maybe any myths that you might have that America's coming of age was a straightforward process. All of the politicians and people involved at this time were clearly not in agreement with how to move forward. They all wanted to have their independent states, but to do it together and to go against England was not a unanimous issue, and there was lots of struggles and political difficulties that they had to go through. And that's something that I certainly maybe did not remember from my history growing up, or didn't recall that all the time. And so it's really impressive to witness and be reminded of how difficult it was. And so this show does a great job of giving you that history, but also doing it very entertaining. There's many humorous moments, and there's also many dramatic moments that really are stirring and make you think about the difficulty that they went through. And so with this song, "But Mr. Adams," it's when they finally came to an agreement just to write a declaration, which was a difficult agreement to come to in and of itself. And then the later in the show, we actually have to vote on approving that, which is a whole other difficulty. But at this point, we're just trying to figure out who's actually going to write it. And the show portrays Thomas Jefferson not particularly interested in doing the job because he had his lovely wife on his mind and had other plans at the time. So there's kind of a humorous back and forth on convincing different congressmen to actually do the writing of the Declaration.
And, of course, you do get talked into it. And the fact that you have your lovely wife on your mind makes for some very tender moments. As Michelle said, there's only two women in the cast, and, of course, Mrs. Jefferson is one of them, Martha Jefferson, and Mrs. Adams, Abigail, is the other, and that is, she's represented, as I recall, mostly through sort of living letters between Abigail and John.
Correct.
That they write back and forth. But you guys get to interact with each other.
Yes. I think that also the purpose of the two women being in the show is really to illustrate how much the Founding Fathers are giving up, because they're all called to Philadelphia. Well, Philadelphia is not an easy journey. You know, back in those days, it was, you know, weeks or months to travel around the country. And so these men have basically given up their lives. They, you know, their farms are going poorly. They're not with their families. And, of course, you know, there's sickness and, you know, there's loss of families and that sort of personal connection. But at the same time, they're also putting their own lives on the line, because what they're doing, even by meeting in this way, is considered treason. So, you know, basically all of their necks are literally on the line. And I think the women help show sort of that family side of them and really all that they are putting on the line for something that they truly believe in.
Well, and this is one of the more tender songs from the show, called He Plays the Violin.
Yeah.
And a number of people are involved in it, but I forget, does it begin with you singing
him? Martha Jefferson, John Adams, and Benjamin Franklin, of course, played by myself, Harvey Mack, and Paul Presney, who are, they're both just delightful, and I'm just so pleased to be able to sing and dance with them. So this song serves sort of as a rounding out of Thomas Jefferson's character, I think, just how he was so, he and his wife had such a close relationship, and even after her death, he never remarried. He was always sort of true to her memory and, you know, was really torn apart by her passing away, which she actually passed away not that long after the Declaration of Independence was signed. So this song talks about how he's very also musically inclined and is a violinist. And there's a lot of history that goes between the two of them. Both of them were very musical, and I think that's something that brought them very close together as a couple, their shared love for music. So this song speaks to that.
It comes from the musical 1776, and we're hearing the soundtrack from the film version. I think it's Betty Buckley in the role of Martha Jefferson, who will be played by Michelle Deering in the Springfield Theater Center's performances this weekend. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Oh, he never speaks his passions. He never speaks his views. Whereas other men speak volumes, the man I love is mute. In truth, I can't recall.
One of the beautiful songs from the wonderful musical 1776, and that those are both editorial comments on my part, not that it really needs my endorsement, but it's called He Plays the Violin from 1776, from the film soundtrack, and it's going to be presented this weekend and next at Springfield Theater, well, by the Springfield Theater Center at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. Performances this Friday through Sunday, and then next Friday through Sunday as well. And on the phone with me in Springfield are the husband and wife couple who are playing husband and wife in the show, Michelle and Matthew Deering, playing Martha and Thomas Jefferson. And that song sort of about, well, definitely about Mr. Jefferson in his absence, as he's supposed to be writing the Declaration and is off playing the violin instead, if I remember the situation at the moment. Is that about right?
Thomas Jefferson was a fabulous writer. In fact, he was a better writer than he was speaker. But he did struggle quite a bit with writing the Declaration. It was important. He knew it was an important thing, but he was distracted and stressed with not being with his wife and his at his farm. He wanted to be a farmer. He didn't necessarily want to be a politician. And so he struggled with having to do it, but he did an amazing job once he did get the job done.
How much has your director, who's Rich McCoy, worked with you, talked with you as a cast about the history and maybe contrasting perhaps the actual history versus the portrayal of it in this show?
I think that the history, while obviously it's a play, so there's, you know, liberties taken, a lot of the actual dialogue is taken directly from letters and other things that they have from that era. Obviously, a lot of Abigail and John's correspondence, the letters, they have all of those letters, so a lot of that appears in the show. As far as, you know, the little fudges that they take, you know, I think that there's always dramatic liberties, but it's an important story, and so the things that they don't have actual records of are the debates. So those are the things that maybe are a little more open to interpretation. But much of the script is directly from the quotes and the writings of the Founding Father and the memoirs. And I think a lot of the actors have taken it upon themselves to sort of do a little background into their own characters. And I know it's just fascinating, the depth of information and really just truly how amazing these people are, just in all aspects of their life. They just have so many amazing qualities. So I know that a lot of the cast members have enjoyed doing their own research on their characters.
And that's a great thing that Rich McCoy allows his cast to do. He really empowers everybody to go out and figure out their character and play with it and work with it and sort of gel into something that really is going to work well for the show.
I'm trying to remember if I've spoken with Rich for a previous show. I think he's directed other things, but he's an English teacher in school or something like that?
Yeah, at Jacksonville High School, he's an English teacher and been there for many years. He also did the high school theater in Jacksonville, and he's done a lot of direction in Jacksonville Theater Guild and more here in Springfield as well.
This year he's did Barefoot in the Park this summer, and also Tuesdays with Maury in February, which was another fabulous show. So we're really pleased to work with Rich. He's a great director, and wish he did even more, because he has such a vision, and I think his cast always truly appreciates that he lets the actors sort of figure out what they want the character to be, and he doesn't hand it down, you know, from on high, and this is how you're going to play it. So I think his characters always have that depth of, you know, the originality of the person that's creating them.
So, Matthew, what was some of the research you did in order to learn a bit more about Thomas Jefferson?
Well, we actually got a hold of a nice biography of Thomas Jefferson, and so that had a pretty thorough review of him, and so we read through, Shel and I read through that together, and it also included a lot of his writings that we could kind of refer to, and that's kind of how we discovered that many of my lines are actually, and the other characters' lines are actually from their own memoirs and letters that they wrote, which really makes it, like Michelle said, since the debates were never recorded, and that's something that apparently John Adams was, and later in life was very upset about, that never happened. But it really brings some reasonable historical accuracy to at least what the characters, what the Founding Fathers actually were thinking during this time. And so it was neat to be able to read about, personally it was neat to read about the struggles that Thomas Jefferson had being a politician. He just kept being in the right place at the right time, whether he wanted to be or not. And he definitely didn't always want to be there, but he ended up being so critical, as was John Adams and Benjamin Franklin and others in the founding of our country. But it was neat to discover that dynamic with Thomas Jefferson, that he wasn't always so excited about doing the politics. He wanted to be a farmer. He wanted to read his books. He had a massive library. His personal library started the Library of Congress. He was an inventor and all sorts of things, and he wanted to be doing all those things, and the politics was sort of the lowest of his list, even though that was some of his biggest successes.
Well, I have to tell you, it's a favorite musical of mine, and I hope folks can go out to see it. It's 1776, being presented by the Springfield Theater Center and Denny Jewelers at The Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield. It opens tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. There's a Saturday night performance as well, Sunday matinee at 2, and then the 21st through the 23rd, also Friday through Sunday, same schedule. And for more information and tickets, you can go to the Hoagland website, which is hcfta.org, Hoagland Center for the Arts, initials.org. And I think that you can probably find the Springfield Theater Center there as well, since they're housed in the space.
And you can also call them at 523-ARTS to order tickets.
That's nice and easy to remember.
Yes, and tell them the Jeffersons sent you.
There we go, the Jeffersons, who are the Deerings. Michelle and Matthew Deering playing Martha and Thomas Jefferson in the show. Let's go out with a fantastic song from the show. This
best
will
song.
Be, oh, the best song, you think?
It's so good.
Yeah.
I love this song. And Gus Gordon does it brilliantly.
He does a lot.
If for nothing else, come to see Gus dance around and dance on chairs.
Dance on chairs, huh? You were going to say, Matthew?
Oh, he just has a lot of fun with it, and he just brings so much energy and humor to the show, and it's just something that would be a great thing to witness.
Yeah.
He plays Richard Henry Lee of Virginia, and you'll get the gist of this song. It's called The Lees of Old Virginia. From 1776, you're listening to Live and Local.
Is Richard Henry Lee, Virginia is my home. My name is Richard Henry Lee, Virginia is my home. And may my horses turn eerily, verily, and I'll come back triumphantly, eerily, verily, everywhere.
From the musical 1776, that was The Lees of Old Virginia from the original, soundtrack of the film rendition of that. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, our program's made possible by Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Dancing with the Devil on Saturday, October 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Pianist Ian Hobson is featured as Sinfonia and the U of I Women's Glee Club celebrate Franz Liszt's 200th birthday. More information is available at 333-6280. We also have support from Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign, also offering a variety of tea and chai, open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713. That tune was called Don Don. It was by Runon Meyer, who is one of the members of Time for Three, which is a string trio that is going to be at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts on Sunday at 3 o'clock. And a string trio is really the mildest possible name I could use for this group. One of their three members is with me on the phone right now. He's one of the two violinists, Zach Depew. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
And Zach is the concertmaster of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And for those who pay attention to things in this area and to this show, he actually is one of the Depew brothers of the Depew Brothers Band, who played in Charleston pretty recently. And we had a chat with their percussionist on the show. And so I guess my first question, Zach, is really this term. I said string trio, but your website uses the phrase classically trained garage band, or at least somewhere I saw that. And I wondered how you came up with that concept. And I'm guessing from with some of your background, you may well have played in a more stereotypical garage band.
Well, you know what? Actually, my older brothers did growing up, and I sort of watched them play in their bands in high school. But you know what it really comes down to is you have three musicians in this group, all classically trained, that are coming together with different backgrounds of different styles of music. The bass player, Renan Meyer, has a large jazz background. Myself, with my three older brothers, grew up in a bluegrass household. And Nick Kendall, the other violinist, grew up in D.C. and actually played in a trash can hip-hop trash can drumming group. So you have these three kind of ideas coming to the table, all under the heading of classical music, if you want to call it that. And you know, the term garage band is something that really really defines an idea of three musicians. Well, in this group, three musicians that get together and just sort of slam ideas against each other. Try this, play that. You know, it depends on what material we're using. Sometimes we'll use an original composition by Renan. Sometimes we'll use a piece of pop music, Beatles tune, Leonard Cohen, Kanye West. I mean, just anything and everything. Or we'll take a classical piece of music. But the idea of a garage band really is that we are hanging out, throwing ideas at each other and trying them and literally experiencing them by ear right there on the spot.
How much improvisation, if any, do you do on stage?
You know, there are elements of improvisation in our group. Probably 15% of what we do has some elements of improv. A lot of times, accompanimental parts are just by feel. But in general, most of our stuff is structured and planned. And really because our experience requires it. We don't like empty space. And what I mean by that is, you know, in an improv group, you can a lot of times have, which is very cool and a whole different experience, but you can have, you know, empty spaces in there, you know, points in the show where somebody is sort of figuring out where they're going. And we like to know exactly where we're going, musically speaking. We want to take the audience on a very clear journey, and we don't like to leave most of that to chance. But there are elements, and certainly our performance practice in general in terms of phrasing and music making is very improvised. It's very spontaneous. No two shows will have the same energy at all. That stems from a reaction to the audience for us as well.
Let's hear a little bit of music, a little bit more music from Time for Three. We're talking with Zach Depew, who is one of the two violinists in this garage band trio, as they call themselves. They're going to be at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And the first piece we had heard was by your bass player, Renan Meyer, who does a lot of composing for you. This next one is a tune of Leonard Cohen's, and it's really gorgeous. I assume the original had words to it. This is Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you can either choose to imagine words or just experience this, what I found to be a rather meditative arrangement here of Leonard Cohen's tune. It's Time for Three here on Live and Local. It was called Hallelujah, performed by Time for Three, a song of Leonard Cohen. They'll be playing in Bloomington Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and I'm talking with one of the two violinists, Zach Depew. along with Nick Kendall, the other violinist, and Ronan Meyer, who's the bass player for the group. Do either of you, between yourself and Nick, take what, you know, sort of the string quartet equivalent term here, and is one of you the first violin and one of you the second violin, or are you just interchangeable and trade off?
We are very interchangeable and trade off. We tend to gravitate to certain roles in the group, but they're not specifically labeled at all.
So how would you characterize those roles for you and Nick?
Well, you know, one of Nick's strengths and wonderful qualities is his spontaneity, his capability to, and it stems from being part of, you know, his drumming group and whatnot from his past, but he has the capability on the instrument to just be an incredible percussive force in an ensemble with the violin. And so he gravitates towards coloration and energy and engine work. I tend to gravitate towards the line, the melody, the thematic material. And to tell you the truth, neither one of us would argue that one is more important than the other, and it'd just be weird to say first or second violin. And not mind you, I've learned so much from Nick about how to be that engine. I don't feel quite as capable as he is, but I certainly have learned from him. And obviously, Nick's a fantastic violinist, and he can play any line and be the melody at any given moment. So we interchange any way we feel when we're creating. But it's not based on, okay, that's the first violin part, that's you. I don't think we've ever said that.
So if we're listening to a recording of Time for Three, and obviously don't see you there, and somebody's playing this particularly wild and out there violin line, is it any more likely to be one of you than the other?
You know, it's hard to say. Honestly, when I've listened to recordings of us, of a piece of music that, I'm familiar with everything, but honestly, it sometimes can be difficult. If I've forgotten an arrangement, you know, that we recorded a few years ago and I listened back to it, I can't tell the difference. And it's kind of weird because we have such different approaches to the instrument. And if you listen to us each individually play a concerto back to back, you would get two very different experiences. But somehow in this ensemble, we use our ears to really, really blend and fit into each other's sounds. It's a lot of fun to play with Nick.
So when you go back to a recording like that, you may not know which one was you, which has to be kind of,
especially with layered chords, like chorale type stuff, you can't decipher sometimes, you know, especially when we make an arrangement, when we're in that creative process and we record something and we go home, we come back the next day, we listen back to remind ourselves of where we were at, because we don't write anything down. And then, you know, we're looking at each other like, is that you? Is that me? Who's playing what? Nobody knows sometimes.
So you really don't write any of this down. It's all, once you create it, it's in your head.
Yeah, up till now. Adding the fourth member, as part of the reason to do that has been to create written music. We do want other people, when we finish these arrangements, we want other people to play these arrangements. We think they're excellent, and we want other people to be able to play them and experience them.
I know you've done a lot of collaborations from orchestra to country musicians and others. What would you say are some of the more unusual collaborations Time for Three has participated in?
You know, I couldn't tell you that it's ever been unusual. And I say that because we haven't been in a situation yet where we've been uncomfortable. I would relate an unusual one for us to be like sort of scratching our heads and what do we do with this? But you know, fortunately for us, up till now, you know, we've worked with, we opened for K.D. Lang, we've collaborated with Branford Marsalis, we've, you know, Pops Orchestras, Classical Symphony Orchestras, Chicago Symphony, Boston Pops, gosh, I'm trying to think, we played with a bluegrass band in West Virginia. I couldn't tell you that any one of those was nothing short of a wonderful experience. Nothing unusual. We've had to do some unusual things sometimes, you know, go play in a situation to promote our concert where we are. You know, one of the difficulties Time for Three has faced in our career is, you know, two fiddles and bass. You're going to have a great night hearing this. And it's sort of like, really? You know? So we've gone to lengths when we show up to a venue to play around. If we're on a college campus, to play around the campus. If we're in a city, to go play, you know, in a coffee shop or something. You know, we'll take our stuff to the people because we believe in it that strongly.
So have you done some of these? Well, I've heard them called, you can't have a flash mob with three players, but, you know, I've seen videos where opera choruses will mm-hmm. show up in the middle of a shopping mall
yeah.
and then just start singing.
Yeah.
Have you sort of done that equivalent?
The trio has not, but the Indianapolis Symphony has done that a few times now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's actually a YouTube video up of the Indy Symphony doing Vivaldi Four Seasons at the mall in Indianapolis there. And that's a fun experience. Always fun. I've really enjoyed those.
Well, I guess if you can say that Time for Three hasn't had collaborations you found unusual, that what that really says is the unusual to somebody else is the usual to you guys, it seems like.
I think so. I mean, we seem to be able to find up to this point the connective threads between other musical worlds and ours, and learn from those other musical worlds and connect with it. To this point, we've been very fortunate.
Speaking of connecting to other musical worlds, when the DePue Brothers Band was here in our area, I know that one of the tunes, I learned that one of the tunes that band does is the Orange Blossom Special of Irving Rouse, and Time for Three does the Orange Blossom Special of Irving Rouse. Is there any relationship between the two arrangements?
You know, there are similarities, no. I mean, the arrangements are very different. We sound very different. We're three string players playing it, and that's a full, true bluegrass band playing it. I couldn't tell you that there's much similarity to the sound of it. There may be some fiddle licks that I do that I can't help but do that I've played with my brothers. But in general, it's a very different experience.
And what makes this tune such an appeal for, I mean, you guys aren't a bluegrass band, but you have some of that background, and other bluegrass and other bands do it. What's the big appeal of this tune that's become such a popular closer, especially?
It's energy, I think. I mean, it's one of those tunes that there's not much you can follow it with.
Well, no, that's true. And we're going to make that true for this interview. And close the conversation with the Orange Blossom Special. The group is called Time for Three, and I've been talking with one of their two violinists, Zach DePue. Nick Kendall is the other, Ronan Meyer is the bass player, and they're all going to be at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. For more information, you can go to artsblooming.org. And for more information on Time for Three, I think it's tf3.org, isn't it?
TF3.com.
TF3.com. And three is the numeral three. Zach, very much for joining us, and best of luck in your travels.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you today.